Hello, and good day to you from episode 19 of our podcast series, Project Breakaway, a metaphorical and literal time in the day when we here at Predator Cycling take some time away from working in the back shop to come and share with our listeners what we're doing, how we're doing it, what it takes to do it, our ideas, our innovative success stories, and even our missteps and failures. If you find yourself with an interest in bicycles, composite manufacturing, out-of-the-box design, or even curiosities beyond, I encourage you to stick with us, settle in, and learn a little. I'm Courtney B., co-owner and project manager of Predator Cycling. I'm here with my partner, RM Goganian, the other co-owner, CEO, lead designer and engineer, and self-taught software pro of Predator Cycling. How's it going, RM?
It's going great. I'm always surprised by what my title add-on gets added to every week.
I try and keep it
it's good.
Not too crazy, but obviously relevant to our discussion.
It's clever. You're very clever.
I try.
I'm glad you're the smart one here.
Okay, so welcome back. Good late morning to you.
Yep.
It's raining.
It is.
Dreary. It's gross. So let's do a podcast. You have been basically getting up at 2 or 3 a.m. for a few days.
Yep.
I think we mentioned it on the previous podcast. You even had a little sleepover here at the shop.
I did.
Which we haven't done in 6 years.
We haven't really done it since we've been here because we only live, 15 minutes
right.
away from the shop?
Yeah.
Yep.
We used to sleep in when the shop was in
Canoga Park,
and we lived in Santa Monica. It's it was just not worth it to drive home sometimes when we had deadlines.
Yeah, and we were literally going to come back 3 hours later.
Yeah.
And you're going to spend an hour and a half.
So there's a lot of sleeping on an air mattress on the shop.
Yeah,
In the shipping room.
There was a permanent air mattress stashed under one of the benches.
Yeah, so you had a little sleepover here
I
by
did.
Yourself. Because of a deadline. So let's discuss. As we've mentioned before, you're deep into many different LinkedIn learning courses that mm-hmm. you are teaching.
Yep.
And you're working on your third chapter of a three-part series.
Yep.
And the series is Composite Design and Manufacturing.
Yep.
Course one is available on LinkedIn Learning. Is it just LinkedIn.com or LinkedIn Learning.com?
It's LinkedIn, and there's a little button on the top that says LinkedIn Learning. I don't know. I think there's a subdomain. I think it's learning.linkedin.
I'm sure it's pretty easy to Google.
I'm sure.
Anyway, course one is up, and course two you have submitted, and it's been in their beta testing for a while, so it should be uploaded and readily available to people soon.
Yeah, it should be up soon.
And then you are currently working on your third mm-hmm. chapter. And so let's briefly describe one and two and then sure. how that relates to number three, and we'll get into number three.
It's actually super simple. The way I broke up the courses is essentially chapter one is basically background composite 101. It's kind of like what you need to know about material properties, matrices, and manufacturing so that you can design for composites. And in chapter two, we basically kind of talk about the industrial design process. So we're talking about understanding what we need to achieve. So how many units are we going to make? What kind of complexity of shape are we going to design so that we can kind of think about what manufacturing protocol we're going to use and what materials we're going to use? And then it's kind of the industrial design side of it where we're talking about designing something. We talk about early simulation because I'm obsessed with it and how simulating something both in CFD and structural early on can really help influence the way you design a part going forward. And then we kind of set that up. And then in chapter three, it's validation and production. So validation is going back to our original simulation data simulating it using higher fidelity solvers. So we can solve for both CFD, so it's a virtual wind tunnel, and also doing your actual composite simulation, which is really helpful to do before you start prototyping. So you basically are essentially building the bike up in composites and then simulating that. And then we talk about concepts of molds for that project. So we're talking about our carbon fiber push bike. And then we actually show you kind of making how we make the bike so you gotta get a feel for it. And then that's it. Ride the bike into the sunset.
Okay. Well, I guess podcast over since you just went over everything. No. Briefly re-explain. Yeah. The whole series is about the making of a carbon fiber toddler push bike.
Yes. Yes. That's the entire series. Sorry.
From design to simulation layup to physically making the bike.
Yeah.
And then, as you said, going off into the sunset, riding off, which in the video in part three, we actually filmed our son.
Yeah.
Not technically going off into the sunset, more like having a fit and crying and throwing the bike down. But, you know, that's what happens to products.
I did not simulate it being thrown onto the ground.
Oh, well.
I should have. I missed that.
Yeah, you really did. Let's go back here.
Okay. Sorry, I thought that's what I was supposed to do.
Yeah, well, you know.
That's I need better instructions.
You need better. Talking about instruction. So LinkedIn pairs you up with a producer to kind of monitor and pace your workload throughout your courses.
Yep.
You've been given about three producers now.
I'm on my third producer, yeah.
Yeah, because of COVID, it's all kind of Zoom calls and virtual, which I guess this is how we started during COVID. So I guess in good times that you would actually be invited to the LinkedIn Learning Campus somewhere in California.
Yeah.
And I could only assume they'd wine and dine you, maybe. Who knows? Maybe. Anyway, they would invite you there, and that's where you would record in a studio and actually, like, see your producer in real life, and they would, you know, kind of give you probably more hands-on instruction.
Yeah, which is what I had signed up for. Like, when I first
what we thought was going to happen.
Yeah, and then COVID happened.
So you got your recording equipment. LinkedIn was, I mean, I wouldn't say kind enough, but I guess they had to adapt, and they sent your audio gear to your house. Mm-hmm. You kind of have to soundproof your house as best you can.
Yep.
Even with, like, screaming kids and dogs barking and garbage men.
Oh, yeah.
And you basically record, and then you check in with your producer.
Yeah.
So the current video, your course three, it kind of crept up on us in a crazy short-term deadline, which is why you have been doing it all week, and you've been sleeping at the shop.
Yeah, just trying to get the last parts of it done, so it should be done today. Today I'll have all of it done today, so, and upload.
Yeah. And so you're talking about course three is specifically the validation and production in relation to the design work that you had already completed on the toddler push bike in the previous two courses.
Yep.
So now the design and validation is all still done in the simulation space.
Yep.
And for that, you use your ANSYS tools.
Yep.
So,
So we're using two different tools here. So we use ANSYS Fluent for our CFD validation.
And that does?
It's basically a theoretical wind tunnel.
Okay.
It does more than just that, too, because you can also do thermal, but
that's
we're not
for
doing
your
it.
CFD.
Yeah.
Your computational fluid dynamics.
Yes, it is.
Which is now seared into my brain.
It is. It's pretty cool.
And then, so that was ANSYS Fluent, and then you use ANSYS
Mechanical.
Mechanical.
And, well, it kind of gets complicated because you have so in ANSYS, you have this thing called Workbench, which is actually a workbench, and you can kind of, like, link things together. It's kind of like visual programming. So you can kind of say, like, okay, this is my geometry, and then this geometry is linked to this program to make a mesh, and then I'm going to solve for these things in here, and then take the results from here and put it into, you know, ANSYS Mechanical Enterprise so that you can actually do the simulation. So there's like three programs for composites. One of them is your prep software. So you can actually build your layup in there. So you actually, like you do in normal, like in real life, you actually build your layup. So you specify your fabrics. And
so in real life, when I'm doing the layup here, I'm like, okay, I'm going to use 6 sheets of pre-impregnated carbon and I'm going to put it in the mold. But do that on your computer and you're like, Courtney took 6 sheets. She laid them in this direction. I'm putting it in the simulation.
Right. Well, one of the things that we typically almost never use just one material.
No.
We're usually always using 2, 3, sometimes even 4
That's
different materials.
That's the secret sauce.
That is. But, like, the thing is how do those materials work with one another? What order do those materials go in? What pattern do those materials go in? There's a lot of complexity that goes into that. And in the past, we always did, I mean, pre-ANSYS a year ago, 2 years ago, like, we literally did flattening. We did some flattening work, but, like, we had to figure all those things out based on regular, like, charts, and we would chart out deflection rates and then figure out layup schedules based on that. There's some other things
you would do that. I go by the trial and error method where I just,
right.
Well, I'm like, let's do it. I go in the back and I wrap apart and then cure it. And then I'm like, that didn't work. Right.
Well, no, but
why is there a hole on that side?
Well, but no, but so like, okay. But like, so that's actually, okay. So you said something is really good because that is exactly what we used to do. And we used to come back to me and say, I can't lay this section. This is the part where that's really hard to figure out. And then I would go back and try and figure out how to repattern it so that we could get it to work.
Right.
Now, that process from when we gave you that first prototype and then you would go back and do it and then come back. I mean, that's, you're talking what? One day fastest is a day turnaround. Realistically, 3 day turnaround on that.
Oh, for when I did a part?
Yeah.
Oh, months. No, I have a box full of, I literally have a box back there for when we were doing the dropout.
Oh, yeah.
I have a box full of like, I don't know, 11 or 12 attempts.
Oh, yeah. I'm just saying that like on a feedback of this work, this didn't work.
Oh, back and forth.
Yeah.
So still, like, still months.
Yeah. I mean, it just took a lot. Now I can actually do that in software.
Or you can at least alleviate that. And theoretically, yes. In simulation, it worked. And then in real life.
I can get you a lot closer on the first one.
Yes.
I can get you probably 5 or 6 iterations down the road on the first one. And then when you give me feedback, I can get another 5 or 6 iterations down the road.
Right.
Because I'm taking your real life feedback and the simulation feedback and looping it together and being like, okay, that makes sense now. Like,
and
now
at least in the past, my biggest thing when I was doing something is I hate hearing like, well, it should work.
Yes.
I'm like, well, it didn't.
Right. Well, and that's where simulation really comes into play because like we used to simulate, I mean, pre-ANSYS, we were simulating quite a bit, but like there was some stuff we just couldn't simulate because like we didn't have multi-physics solvers and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, and I mean, I'm still getting better at ANSYS. I'm obviously no master ANSYS user, but.
And you know how I feel about physics.
Yeah. Let's not. That's, another day.
Every time Aram explains a physics, because I skipped physics in high school. It wasn't worth my time, but. Aram's always like, you know, this technically, you know, this happens and this happens in this reaction. Technically, theoretically. I'm like, okay, do it. Oh, well, guess what? It didn't work.
Right. So then you'd go off to tell me that physics doesn't work.
Physics doesn't work. It's all theory. And then he's like, well, there was wind and this and all these variables. And I was like, doesn't matter.
Doesn't work.
Doesn't matter. If there are too many variables, then a theory is not worth it. Anyway,
sure.
Got a little off. We're talking about your validation and simulation.
Yeah.
The tools that you were using. And then your because ANSYS is a huge company and and usually the people or the clients or the companies that utilize this software are kind of like, you know, these high-tech aviation, like giant corporations that have all the money in the world. And as we've discussed many times before, we are part of the ANSYS startup program. So we have access to the software, but like the learning side, not so much. And I think they're just trying to work that out and figure it out. So
it's been a big challenge.
Yeah, for a tiny little company like us, like, yes, we got the software, but okay, maybe we can't get the learning package too. So, but the thing about it is Aram is a self-taught learner of everything. So basically he's teaching himself as he goes, which is great for us because we'll know how everything works. But as you're doing it, it's kind of frustrating.
It's incredibly frustrating. Like
there's been quite a few hiccups.
Yeah. Like I'll be into software and like, I'm like, it should, like, the basic thing is, I mean, I understand how ANSYS works. I understand how the solvers work. I get the math behind it. The physics makes sense. Mm-hmm. But where it gets into tricky, like the tricky part is like, well, you know, some of the workflow concepts that you get once you've used a program, like, you know, I should mesh in this software versus meshing in this. Like that was one of my big problems I did in Fluent. I was using one of the other meshers that's built into Workbench that it automatically brings you into and didn't learn that, you know, you should actually just load it into Fluent and mesh in there because it has way better meshing tools. Like I didn't know that. It took me, you know, 30 hours before I figured that out.
Yeah. And you know it's bad when you're asking me, like, well, I don't know how it works. And I'm like, okay, well, let me Google it. What is a rosette?
Oh, yeah. We were doing rosettes the other day,
I think you know what it is. You just couldn't get it to work.
I couldn't get it to
select. I, on the other hand, had to research what it was first before I could even attempt to try and help
you. Well, it was just like, so our reseller who gives us, who we get ANSYS through, sent us some, they have their own, like, learning portal, which has some stuff, and I mean, my problem too is like, I'm looking at some of the composite simulation stuff. There's very few people that use the composite simulation tools, period.
So the learning information is just not available.
It's not very much. And if it is, it's kind of like, so like some of the stuff that they have is just, it's dated. It's like 3 or 4 years old. Mm. And it's like old PowerPoint presentations, which is fine.
But then, no, it's the worst way of learning. PowerPoint is the worst. Absolute worst.
So, and then some have videos, but like the video ones are usually more dated and the PowerPoint presentations are more current. So like you're just going back and forth. Like if you're just using mechanical, there's tons of bits and pieces. Mm-hmm. But like you said, I mean, definitely on the learning side, with ANSYS is hard. And mm-hmm. the other thing that's hard is just like you're talking about a massive collection of software. I mean, it's just huge. And the way ANSYS is built, everything can essentially get ported to something else. So like I'm using currently like on my simulation stuff, I'm using like 4 different pieces of ANSYS software mm-hmm. to do my simulation. So it's not just, you know, knowing one piece of software, it's learning all 4 of them and how they all work together and prepping that together. And then because you can drive everything from Workbench, which is essentially a visual programmer, you can just throw a ton of variables into it. Mm-hmm. But anyways, it's great. We're making a lot of progress, and I could not imagine doing it the old way now. Like now that we have all the tools, I'm like, oh man, this is ridiculous. Like you have to do it this way.
Mm-hmm. So we went over the tools and we discussed what you were trying to achieve on the validation track. So you were talking about CFD validation versus composite structural testing validation. Mm-hmm. And you want to do all of this before, in theory, before you make a physical mold, before I become involved and I'm actually doing a physical layout.
Right. And that's kind of like, it was my early point that we talked about before, is that, you know, setting up that gets you down the road faster. Mm-hmm. Because like, you know, one of the things you don't want to know is like, oh, that mold's like, oh, well, like that's going to make it really difficult to make this part. Or we thought that the mechanical properties were going to be this, but we simulated it. And like, obviously this needs to be thicker and I mm-hmm. don't want to go back and like have to recut a mold.
No. And plus I get irritated when I have to spend more money on materials.
Oh, absolutely.
Recutting a mold. And then sometimes I just like, we have to stop. Yeah. There's no more money is available for this mold making messed up. And now we have to take a break.
Yeah.
Which is usually how things happen. But hopefully the simulation software alleviates a lot of that stress for on sure. a small business.
Oh yeah. It helps a lot. I mean, even for a big business, I mean, any business, if you can simulate it, and that's the thing that it's like, if you do, what makes it so powerful is that, you know, I think we've talked about it before, but keeping your process digital as long as possible is so beneficial. Mm-hmm. And this actually gets you to a point where you can go start to finish completely digital. I mean, obviously it's in theory, but
theory.
you know, it's simulated and validated, and then you can make the copy of it. And then the final part, the only part that should really, there should only be kind of like 2 parts that are digital, non-digital, is the final finishing of the part, the sanding, polishing, like that little area, mm-hmm. and then the part that you're gonna do, which is the loading and unloading and like the layup of the part.
Yeah.
That's the only part that's not being kept digital. Mm-hmm. So you have so much more control over that process. And yeah, it should, I mean, even before we got deep into this side of it, like I don't think that the RF20 we could have come to production without all of the tools from ANSYS. I mean, I don't think it was possible. I mean, you're talking about, I mean, the amount of physics that's involved in those mandrel systems that we do.
Oh my gosh. There was still a lot of trial and error though.
Oh, for sure. But just think about the time before we had ANSYS solvers and we were trying to figure it out. And then when we got ANSYS solvers, the time difference that it made and how much better they got and actually being able to do it in production. Like it became a game. It's huge.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's get back to the CFD, validation versus composite structural simulation.
Yeah, so we simulate both. So like when we bring in, we use discovery in chapter 2 of the course. We were talking about the CFD side, and we're doing it all in discovery, which is a live physics solver, which you see live happening in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Once we're done with that and we want to do the final validation, we do that in ANSYS Fluent, which is not a live solver. So it's a lot more complex of a piece of software. So you actually have to mesh. You build a 3D mesh of it's a volumetric mesh of the space that the product takes up, and then we use physics solvers. We use the solver to figure out the
wind
flow.
When you talk about physics solvers, you're saying you made an object and then you hit a button and then it gives you back numbers. And those numbers allow you to do what?
So you get back numbers. You also get back visuals showing you how the wind flows
like
over the
lines. Green lines, red lines, blue lines.
Yes. Yes.
And green means fast. Go.
It will tell you the flow of the wind. Typically, okay. Green is fast and red is stopped.
Red is stopped. If I know anything from Go Dog Go, it's green is go and then red is stop.
That's essentially what you're looking at.
So basically when you talk about wind, like the faster wind is flowing over the green area, so you have the better physics lines and you better layout.
Yeah, so you have...
And red is wind drag.
Yes, essentially, yes. So, and also just understanding how the wind is flowing over the part so that you can design the part better so it cuts through the wind.
Because I'm told that people want their bicycle to go fast.
Yes.
So we want green.
Lots of green.
Okay.
Well, it's also skill. Yes, lots of green.
Okay.
I like the way it's like you push the button.
I mean, I assume. Is it literally a button that's like solve? Does it say solve?
It says calculate.
Okay. That's the same thing.
You'd be very unimpressed though because it's like this gray box, this gray dialogue box that just says calculate.
Yeah.
And then it takes like, I don't know. I mean, well, it's not fair. We have a really big computer, but it takes like 20 minutes, 30 minutes to solve one of the big meshes.
Okay.
I mean, you can take, some of them will take two days to solve, but.
But the meshes are in the composite structural simulation, not CFD, right?
Or no, there are meshes everything, in both? Everything is meshed. And so when you get into simulation, everything are meshes, which for meshes are basically, imagine small little tiny triangles, usually, or shapes wrapped over a part. Like if you shrink wrap a part, something. Mm-hmm. That's a mesh. It's that.
I'm sorry. And what are the meshes? They're just like
that's
making
how
the
solver works. It uses that to create the surface because you're going to get down a rabbit hole here because you're going to talk about like BREP surfaces and NURB surfacing.
There's
and
not
like
just like a high level, like the triangles.
The triangles are essentially the surface of the part. They create the part.
And they're
the
just
tangible.
Little tiny like pieces of the part. So each little centimeter has a number associated
And they're
number
all connected. And then they're connected together, or if two separate meshes are touching each other, they could be bonded or joined.
I get that.
Okay.
And
so
like,
that's,
you know.
Yes, and so you can't...
It's like group in Photoshop.
There's meshing and...
Yeah. Big as my software knowledge is.
I'm trying not to go down the rabbit hole of trying to explain how...
Okay, well then let's get to the composite structure.
So now... Yeah, okay, perfect.
So you're talking about meshing surfaces, you're talking about fabric material properties and placements,
you're
talking about laminate stack-ups or layers, and draping and the physical layout.
Yeah, so... In CFD, we're solving for the negative space that the product takes up. In composite simulation, we're talking about surfaces. So we're
the positive structure.
The positive structure
of the toddler bike.
Of the toddler frame we're using. And then we're basically taking that external surface and then building layups of composites internally into it is what we're doing. And that's how we're building our layups. And so in when we mesh for composites, it's usually much simpler because we're just taking that surface and wrapping that surface. And once we have that, we can bring that into our composite tools and start defining fabrics, the types of fabrics that we're going to use. So like in that bike, we're using a plain woven material as well as a unidirectional material. And so we'll basically... specify where the material goes on the part and the direction in which the fiber goes.
At this point, have you flattened the 3D object?
So, okay, very good point, because materials, composite materials, are flat. They're flat.
It's fabric.
It's fabric. It's
like you walked
sheets.
Into Joann Fabrics, you got yourself carbon fiber, now you got to make a bike.
Yes, exactly. So you have to drape that material over the part. So we use draping functions inside of ANSYS to calculate the drape and angle orientation of the material as it falls onto the part. So we can then orient the materials based on how that part flows. And then the part that saves a ton of time is then you can pattern that. So then we can take that complex shape.
And then put on like the other side.
And then we can actually just like basically click a button and it projects what the cut surface is like. So you know the pattern that you need to cut of the material to put on the part.
Yeah.
So it makes it a lot simpler.
And then in the simulation world, you then take that flattened part and then put it back into a 3D shape.
Yeah, that's how the solver actually does it. So you don't actually see it doing that, but it basically does it in real time.
And that's where you can then throw it into whatever, and you add your force and your flex to mimic the bike being ridden.
Yep, being ridden.
Now
and being
you
tested.
Can see how all the variables, your material, the way you laid the part, how much material you used, even like heat, thermal, how you got it cured or whatever.
You can. I'm not doing it for this bike, but yes, you can.
And because, so now you can see how all of that, all of those variables work cohesively. To make, to basically determine the stamina of the bike.
I love that, stamina of the bike, yes.
Well, you know, how long it takes before the bike to break.
Yes, I mean, everything has a fatigue. I mean, usually it's a fatigue, it's your fatigue rate, but yes.
And that's in the simulation realm. But like you were saying, in my world of reality, that you could then use all that information and you could lay up the carbon on the cutter, the CNC or whatever, and you can now flat, because you know what it looks like when it's flattened, you can cut that pattern out.
Yep.
And then I can take that cut and I can actually wrap it around the tube or make a tube out of it.
Yeah.
And then, so it's going from a 2D to a 3D.
Yep, exactly.
In real life.
Yes. And then also the next step of that process is that because we test all of our stuff and we built our own testing machine, so we actually can do the forces and loads that we apply to the bike relevant to our machine, so that when we simulate it, we can get real life data numbers where we know how the machine should respond, so that when we test the bike in real life, the actual bike that's cured, we can validate that to our simulation and know, hey, did Courtney lay that up right? Did Aram do his physics right? And if something went wrong, where did it go wrong? How did it go wrong? Like, we can figure those things out immediately.
So everything done in simulation, all the way up to even like testing the frame against your wind. Well, I guess we don't have a wind tunnel here, but
no,
against all your forces and loads.
Yeah,
we can actually then make the bike and do it here in person.
Yeah,
and then
the
match everything up.
Exactly. So now that's where things get interesting, because then you
can
start.
That's not in your course. This course, is it? That's a whole other course.
Kind of. I mean, I touch on the idea that we validate it, but now here's where things get more interesting. Just think about this. So if you simulate, like for instance, when we do simulations, we can do hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different types of simulations and different scenarios. But if we can come up with a benchline system where we can take a bike or any product and say, basically, we have these four tests that we do that will validate all of the numbers that we figured out in simulation, and we can validate it against it. I mean, now you're talking like, I mean, that's craziness. Like, you can actually take a bike and instead of doing like, let's say, 25 hours of stress load testing, which is what ISO requirements are for bicycles. I mean, you can't obviously test every single bike because you'd break the bike. But we could take a miniature version test and benchline it so that we can validate the numbers of that test against the failure tests and know that each of those bikes would pass or each of those products would pass. It'd give you a whole new level of...
In theory.
It's like what we do is we do something similar. Currently, we have a small baseline test that we do, but like we haven't quite gotten to the point yet where we can basically full loop that with simulation data.
And simulation validation is not like a new thing in like industry.
No.
But for like composite.
It's not new. Okay, you say it's not new. It was one of the questions we got at Simulation World. It's not new for
the industry
in the sense of aerospace, military, defense. We were talking about projects that, you know, the part costs, you know, $2 million.
Yeah,
it's not new in those spaces, but it's new in the space where you could scale it to a product that cost, you know, $5,000 from $1 million to $5,000. That never really before was scalable down. It is now becoming scalable down. I mean, obviously, in order to do it correctly, we have to build a bunch of software and like hardware loops for ourselves to do it, but we can.
Yeah.
I mean, 5 years ago, we couldn't.
Right.
So, now it becomes interesting because now you have parts. I mean, like, think about the technology, I mean, side topic, but think about the technology that's behind the Genius water bottle cage. I mean, that's craziness. And you're talking about insane amount of software, insane amount of hardware, and all of that coming together to make a, you know, essentially a $40 part. That's pretty, it's cool. It's super cool.
So that's what makes us special.
I thought it was because my mommy told me. She always said I was special.
So let's review real quick before we wrap it up. Another reminder that our custom and stock versions of the cleat adjusters are both live and ready for purchase on our website. I've taken a few more photos for the stock versions that I hope to add to the product page here soon, as well as instructions on how to use them, because that might be beneficial to someone wanting to buy them.
Probably would.
So I just got to clean up that page just a little bit for people that are new to bike fitting product. And then things to look forward to. Next week, we've invited a friend of Predator Cycling, Mike Geyer, who is the NVIDIA industry marketing manager and who is also co-speaker of your recent classes.
Yeah, at Simulation One.
And then we want him to come sit down and record with us and hopefully have an interesting conversation about the future of manufacturing. And in addition to all the GPU acceleration we've talked about that NVIDIA has helped us with, we also want to maybe introduce a product that they call Omniverse.
Super cool.
The way that Arm has described Omniverse to me, it seems like it incorporates quite a few things that I still cannot wrap my head around. And I can never re-explain it to anyone. So you seem to have a pretty good understanding of it.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that the marketing lead of NVIDIA can probably enlighten me a little bit more and maybe explain it a little better.
Yeah, no, it should be super cool. It's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still in its infancy, but
it sounds really cool. Like, it sounds like a Marvel world.
It is.
But
that's it.
Yeah, I still have no idea what it does.
Yeah.
So hopefully we have a discussion about that.
Yep.
So anything else before we wrap it up?
No. I think, yeah.
Okay. Well, we thank you for choosing to take some time with us, and we look forward to future breakaways. Look for us on Instagram and LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and in person here in Tennessee. We ask our listeners to please share, like, and subscribe. We're available on all major streaming platforms. Thanks for listening. Have a good one, and find some time to break away.